Good afternoon. You're tuned to the Afternoon Magazine on the information battery, The Farmer's Wife, on public television last week. It was a rather, up close, and that would be an understatement, look into the lives of the Bushcutter family, Daryl and Juanita and their children, as they struggled over a three-year period to get to their dream, to fulfill their dream, which was farming. And a number of factors, mostly external, some of them internal, were, of course, thrown up as roadblocks along the way. And watching the dynamics of how they handled them, how they didn't handle them, of course, added to the entire plot as it unfolded in The Farmer's Wife. We'll be using that as a basis for our discussion today about strengthening family resilience. And that is also the title of a new book by our guest, Dr. Frona Walsh, who is a co-director of the Center for Family Health at the University of Chicago. He is affiliated with Family Therapy Training Institute, the editor of the Journal of Marital and Family Therapy, past president of the American Family Therapy Academy, recipient of AFTA's Award for Distinguished Contribution to Family Therapy, Theory, and Practice, and an approved supervisor by AAMFT, an international expert on healthy families and strength-based family therapy. And her publications include Normal Family Processes, Living Beyond Loss, Death in the Family, Women in Families, Framework for Family Therapy, Chronic Disorders in the Family, and, as I mentioned, her new book, Strengthening Family Resilience. Dr. Walsh, welcome to the program.
It's a pleasure to be here.
In trying to decide where to start, I suppose that we would probably use some of the events in The Farmer's Wife as a framework to work on. And did you get to see the entire documentary?
Yes, I did. Mm-hmm. It was a wonderful documentary. It was at times slow-moving, but that brought it to a real true-to-life sense of the struggle that this couple faced in meeting their dream.
Mm-hmm. In watching it, I was amazed at the reality that was there. Apparently, the techniques that were used in the production of it kept the cameras almost hidden, and you really did have a sense that that they did not play to the cameras, but were rather, you know, we were just maybe through a one-way mirror, you know, eavesdropping in and
exactly.
being able to see
exactly.
what was happening in this process.
Exactly.
As I watched it, you know, and watched the different dynamics and the different phases they moved through, and we'll get more deeply into the specifics of it. You know, it didn't seem like it was all that improbable. It seemed like that's the situation that I have seen a lot of people, a lot of close friends and families go through.
That's right. And I understand that was probably at the heart of their motivation for allowing these cameras to come into their lives, that they were struggling with the American dream in the sense of an ordinary family that just wants to be able to make a decent living farming. And I think that is a very common phenomenon, and it's hidden from view in most of our society.
Mm-hmm. What? Let me give out the telephone numbers first, because I'm sure we'll have some telephone calls in this next hour, and they are 333-9455 in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455, and outside the Champaign-Urbana area, toll-free 1-800-222-9455. That's 1-800-222-9455, and feel free to call and add to the conversation this afternoon. Let me ask, and as I was reading through the manuscript on your latest book, Strengthening Family Resilience, the question came up time and time again. What is the normal family? Is there a normal family? Is there a role model, ideal family that we can all model ourselves after? Because that seems to be a lot of the way that we behave, is to model,
that's
you know.
Right.
And it occurred to me that it's just becoming harder and harder to decide what is the normal family.
Exactly. Well, our society has gone through so many changes and upheavals in social patterns and economic circumstances over the last two or three decades that the family has changed dramatically from the 1950s Ozzie and Harriet In the 50s, it was possible for one breadwinner to be able to support a family at a moderate standard of living. And there were many government subsidies after World War II that also made that possible in the 50s. But in our times, it's now taking, in most cases, two breadwinners, husband and wife, both working as hard as they can just to eke out a basic living, so that the traditional notion of the breadwinner father and the homemaker mother really doesn't fit the challenges of our times. And I think that's we certainly saw that in evidence in this family. Another a common myth is that you have to be a particular family form in order to be healthy. The intact family is the only way to be healthy. And I think in the 90s we're seeing that that families come in a variety of forms, and that what's much more important are the processes, the quality of relationships that make a family healthy.
Mm-hmm. My question is, when did we adopt this model of the 1950s TV program family, the Leave It to Beaver type family? When did that come about? Because it occurs to me, if you look back farther into history, and as we heard this morning on a Focus 580, very good segment in the 11 o'clock hour this morning, it really wasn't until the Industrial Revolution hit, and perhaps more so in the post-World War II era, that we got the model of the father being gone from the family all day working, the mother staying home.
That's right. And I think this model in the 50s also, when we think about it, was the first TV family seen in our culture, because it came just at the advent of TV in everyone's homes. And so we kind of latched on to Ozzie and Harriet, mm-hmm. or All in the Family, or Leave It to Beaver. And I think also out of a concern that is very common in families: are we normal? Are we doing it right? Are we giving our children the kinds of values and practices that they're going to need? So I in my own research, I found that when I cast my net into the community to have non-clinical families, in other words, families where no one was breaking down with serious emotional or mental problems, but just ordinary families in the community, many of them called to participate in our study because they wanted reassurance that they were, in fact, normal. So I think the concerns about are we doing it right, are we normal, are quite widespread because our culture is so diverse.
It puts a lot of pressure on you.
It certainly does. And in a way, we're now in what sociologists call the post-modern or post-industrial age, where there's so many changes in the workplace and so many economic strains on families that families have to invent new models for relating. If you're no longer automatically a full-time homemaker, but you are now also working all day and then coming home, there needs to be a renegotiation so that you aren't just taking on that second shift. Men and women need to look at what it means to be successful as a man, as a father, as a husband, as a mother and a wife. And I think I don't know if you want to get into this particular story, but that was an issue that came to the fore in this family, where there was a lot of concern about the husband and was he really fulfilling his role as a breadwinner, when it appeared to everyone, her family, his family, the creditors, that he was failing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, let's talk about that. I want to remind everyone our telephone numbers are 333-9455 in Champaign-Urbana. That's 333-WILL or 1-800-222-9455, 1-800-222-WILL if you're outside the Champaign-Urbana. And feel free to join our conversation with Frona Walsh, who is the co-director of the Center for Family Health at the University of Chicago and an author. Her latest book, Strengthening Family Resilience. Relating back to the Bushcutter family, Daryl and Juanita, Daryl especially grew up in a family where his father was the breadwinner. The mother stayed home. The father farmed, ran the farm. And that is the model that Daryl and Juanita were striving for.
Well, although, even at the start, Juanita said she was drawn to Daryl and drawn to farming life because she wanted to do it differently from the traditional model. She wanted it to be an equal partnership.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is an ideal that most younger couples are beginning their marriages with.
Did you get the sense that Daryl bought into that from the beginning, though?
I think he did at an ideal level. You know, in our heart of hearts, we have a dream about an equal and just relationship. But I think that there are a lot of things that feed into it. For instance, if a man grows up in a society where he's thought of as a success dependent on his ability to earn a living for the family, it's going to strike him much harder when they have rough financial times, because it strikes at the core of his manhood, the core of his sense of identity and esteem as the head of the household. So it's going to be much harder when he is brought up in a family that says, well, yeah, you might have values that it should be equal, but you're the man and you ought to be earning this. So, you know, there's a conflict between maybe the goals that the couple might have that are idealistic and some of the traditional expectations that are kind of in the drinking water that still are very powerful.
We have some phone calls coming in, so let's go to the telephones right now and see what some of our AM 580 listeners are thinking. Mm-hmm. And we'll go to line 4, first of all, on line 4. Where are you calling from, please?
I'm calling from Eureka.
All right.
Your just previous minute or two discussion to me fits right into what I want to say, because it seems to me that economics is really the heart of the matter, and in the political climate, one hears all sorts of sentimental rhetoric about the family, this, and family values, but it seems to me, it's the way I interpret it, the very people that are talking about family values have, in the past number of years, made it more and more difficult by promoting a kind of economic Darwinism, competitiveness, more concentration of wealth, and less real help for families. And that seems to me to be the real problem, is the increasing concentration of wealth and the lack of real income, ability to gain an income over where people have been in previous years.
That's right, for an ordinary family.
Yes.
That's right. That it is more of a struggle than ever before. And for Juanita, well, both of them, when hardship worsened, deepened, you could say that farming, that they entered farming, which inherently was a difficult life, and one reason her parents were reluctant to have her go into it. But then when there was a drought and their farm really was almost lost to the creditors, both of them had to take extra jobs during the day and do farming at night just to keep it going, just to survive.
May I ask one more question, please? Was that filmed in, say, 87, 88, and 89 in Nebraska?
No, actually, it was just a couple of years ago.
Oh, was it? Oh, I see. Yeah.
93 to 95.
I think 93 through 95. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I see. That drought didn't touch Illinois very much. I was just wondering.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you very much for the call. Yeah, Daryl. He grew up. His father obviously was a relatively successful farmer. Fed the family, you know, strictly on the farm. Didn't work outside the house. Was not very encouraging to Daryl. Didn't have a lot of words of encouragement, at least that he could express. And that had to add to the frustration. And then the financial troubles they started experiencing, and his having to take a full-time job outside of their farm and then come back and farm while Juanita was cleaning houses. Right. All of this adding up, and then Juanita taking over the family finances to work with the FMHA and others and the banks and the creditors to keep things afloat, taking away, I would imagine, some of Daryl's self-esteem. He reached a point where and I think a lot of us have felt this in life, I can't win, is what you hear yourself saying. I can't win. Nobody will give me a break. Your parents, speaking of Juanita's parents, didn't approve of him, didn't think he was measuring up, thought he should get a regular job, bring home a paycheck, they said. His parents certainly weren't giving him a lot of backing, and it didn't seem like he had anywhere to turn, but at the same time, he did have Juanita to turn to, but he wasn't able to.
That's right. Well, I think that's where, for a man, with the expectation that He's only successful to the extent that he can make his business or his farm successful. He really felt like a failure and was hearing it kind of the Greek chorus from all around, his parents, her family. And she really was the rock, the bedrock. But what was so striking to me and I think so moving in this story, oftentimes therapists see couples come in after the crisis, and often at a time when there's been violence or when one partner leaves, as Juanita did leave very briefly, that they come for help because they've really gone beyond their limits. And I think what was so helpful to see in this film was all of those streams that were feeding into that over time that led gradually to Daryl's losing confidence in himself, mm-hmm. Feeling like he had no support, and really becoming humiliated. And I think that churned away inside of him, and it also began to erode their communication. One of their sources of resilience early on was their very strong connectedness, mutual respect, and their ability to share their emotions and talk very openly and honestly with each other. And I think what we saw in the second episode, that as the strain increased and Daryl felt worse and worse about himself, the communication was very strained. They could hardly look at each other. They could hardly talk to each other. And I think he felt a loss of respect from her. And I think it was actually she was helping him out by going out to the creditors, because it would have been even more humiliating for him to have gone out to the bank and have said, I can't meet my debts. And it was easier for her, and she did that in a way as a gift to him. She took that on because she knew it would be too humiliating for him. But I also saw how, as he became increasingly defeated, this downward spiral almost led to violence in their relationship, where he started talking very disrespectfully and abusively toward her, and where she set the limit and said, I won't be treated like that. And she took the girls and left very briefly. And it was in that brief separation that he kind of realized that she was his solid rock, and that he really loved her and wanted her back, and that he needed to make some changes.
Mm-hmm. And he did go seek counseling,
went
to the anger group.
That's right. And you know, that's interesting, because our research on resilience shows that resilient people aren't... They aren't ashamed to seek help when it's needed, that they realize they've got to get some help, and they go and get it for themselves, and that it's a sign of strength rather than weakness.
Our telephone numbers are 333-9455 in Champaign-Urbana, toll-free 1-800-222-9455, and we have the telephone lines open throughout the program, of course. Let's talk about why some families are able to get some intervention going before they break up, before violence happens, while others, for some reason, never really realize what's happening. Mm-hmm. And I think that, sometimes it seems like taking the path of breaking up, of saying that this just isn't working, I'm out of here, I've done everything I can, I've tried and tried, the other person just won't understand.
Mm-hmm.
It just makes sense. It seems like the only path at the time.
Yeah.
And then a breakup will occur, unless there is some intervention,
and probably
massive and drastic intervention at that point.
Yeah.
But why is it that it just occurs to, look, we're going down the wrong path. Let's get together on this. Let's talk about it. And others just become, incommunicative.
Yeah. Well, partly we live in a culture where there's a lot of stigma to seeking help for problems, and to even acknowledging I've got a problem that I can't solve by myself. We have this, bring yourself up by your bootstraps, solve your own problems, don't be dependent on others. And I think a lot of people think of counseling or therapy as a sign of weakness and failure, rather than it's a lifeline that can help me sort out the problems I'm struggling with so that I can find better solutions and be stronger as a result of it. And it's true that people who are able to come earlier, couples or families or individuals, at the first signs, it's nipping a small problem in the bud rather than down the road. Sometimes the kinds of financial strains that we saw this family under lead to alcoholism, and as well as violence, or to abandonment, or where people just give up and end the relationship altogether. But I was struck at how resilient both of these individuals were and how resilient their relationship was.
What were some of the signs that we might look for of their resilience?
Well, first of all, they had an attitude of, we will overcome these obstacles. We are going to prevail. Yes, the odds may be against us, but we're going to work together as hard as we can. The sense of perseverance, of hard work, of a confidence that if we just keep working away at this, we're going to overcome the odds. And in fact, Juanita, when she went to the creditors, really communicated that. And she said, you know, you can trust my word. We're not going to go out on you. We're going to work until we make this money back, and we're going to pay off our debts. It was enormous fortitude and perseverance and in the face of adversity.
Mm-hmm. This is while living on like $20 a month so for groceries.
Right. Yeah. And so there was a sense that it may be, we may be at rock bottom now, but we're committed to work together until we bring ourselves back up again. And that strength of commitment to the relationship and to hard work and to doing really whatever was necessary to make it work was really quite remarkable, mm-hmm. because their lives were really under assault there.
Now, why do some people have that, while others would get to that point and just say, this isn't worth it?
Yeah. Partly, I think, when we think about resilience, sometimes we think about it as personality traits, that some people are just born with the right stuff, you know, and mm-hmm. they're a little bit more tough and rugged and bounce back easier. But it also is in our upbringing, and families do a lot to encourage courage. If we think about this couple as being extremely courageous, I think they both grew up in basically strong families. They also had very strong faith. Their religion was a very powerful source, a wellspring of resilience for them. And they gave that faith to their daughters as well. There were scenes where the mother every night went in, no matter how hard the day was, to tuck those girls in and to sit with them while they said their prayers, to make sure that they went to Sunday school, that they went to, I believe, a small religious school that both parents had attended. So faith was a very important anchor in their lives.
Mm-hmm. In your book, Strengthening Family Resilience, you talk quite a bit about modeling based upon, looking first of all for what would be the quote-unquote normal family and finding that there are still problems in the normal family.
Yeah.
But you talk quite a bit about modeling after what goes right in the families as opposed to the traditional examples of, well, this is what went wrong, this is what to avoid.
Exactly. I think if we turn on TV, my daughter, a couple of years ago when she turned 10, started watching the evening news, and we thought, oh, well, this will be a good experience for her to become more aware of the world. And after a few days, she said, they call this the news? They should call this the bad news. And, you know, we chuckled about it, but it was really true because on the media we see, you know, everything is, families are falling apart, they're failing, they're dysfunctional. If you pick up any magazine, you know, you find a list of all the ways in which your family can be dysfunctional. And there's even a society for adult children of dysfunctional families. So we, as a culture, tend to find fault with families. And I've always been interested in my work in looking at not which families fall down, but which families are able to pick themselves up and right themselves after they've experienced failure, after they've experienced a tragedy, or they've been through a traumatic experience. For instance, the research shows that most people who have been abused in their childhood do not go on to abuse their children. So the really important question is, what goes right for them? that they're able to overcome a difficult and painful childhood and learn from that experience to be good parents to their children.
We have another telephone caller, okay. So let's go to the phone line. It's line four again. Hi, where are you calling from?
Oak Forest.
Oak Forest. Go ahead, please.
Well, I just want to say my husband and I watched The Farmer's Wife all three nights, every minute of it, and it was wonderful, and we found out that most of our friends watched, too. We're from the Chicago area, so maybe my husband's family has a farming background, so that drew us to the program. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the program, the credits went so fast, and there was an address to write to them, and we didn't get to jot it down, and I was wondering if you have that.
Sure. I can help you out with that. Thank you very much for calling. Let me pass along the address. Let's see. Which one do I want here? I have all the materials in front of me, and I need to... It was a frontline presentation, and it was from WGBH in Boston. Now, who was it you wanted to write to? Do you want to write to the producers?
They didn't have an address for Juanita, and I forget his name.
Okay, for Daryl and Juanita.
Yeah, Daryl.
Okay. Yeah, I don't think I have that in any mind, but I can give you the phone number and the address of the station that produced it, and maybe they can get you in contact here. There's a telephone number here for viewer comments and inquiries, and it's area code 617-492-2777, extension 5355.
Okay,
you get 617-492-2777, extension 5355.
And listening to your guest, I just had one other comment that popped into mind, is society's tendency to blame mom and dad for everything.
That's right.
That the children don't like in life. Or,
that's right.
You know, everything's
right.
Mom and dad's fault.
That's right.
And, you know, and now when you're grown up, that's one problem. Not necessarily in our family, but generally in society. But the other problem that I see in our grown children and all our friends' grown children is now that we've grown up and you've given us everything, nothing is your business anymore. Stay out of our lives, and we'll call you when we want to talk to you.
Uh-huh. Or we'll see
and
you.
And I find that in many of our friends' children, is not in all of our daughters, but some of them. And I'd just like to hear you comment about that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you know, when we were talking earlier about this ideal family of the 50s, it was this nuclear family model that, you know, you have a white picket fence around you. You grow up and you leave home, and you're an adult, and then you have your own house and you raise your own kids. And that's really not the healthiest way to go through life. If we look... There was always rich interaction between adults and their parents all the way through adulthood. And grandparents very involved with their grandchildren. And now people, because of jobs or because of this belief that you're not supposed to be dependent on your parents anymore, just have lost that rich connection that is so valuable.
Mm-hmm.
I know when I was growing up, I mean, we always had grandparents, aunts, uncles, cousins, an extended family all
That's
the time,
right.
And partially because we all lived in the Chicago area, but partially because that's what we valued.
That's
and
right.
And I don't see society valuing it.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
Now, it's interesting because there's a lot of talk about family values, but I think you've just put your finger on one of the most important ones that we need to nurture, how to keep close connections across the life cycle, not just raising your kids and then they go off and that's it, but... throughout life.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much for the caller. And another way perhaps to get a hold of Daryl and Juanita, it's Daryl and Juanita Bushcutter, and that is spelled B-U-S-C-H-K-O-E-T-T-E-R. Their town is Lawrence, Nebraska, where they live, and that's a town of only about 300 or so people. So I would imagine if you just addressed Daryl and Juanita Bushcutter in Lawrence, Nebraska, they'd probably get the, and I'm sure there are going to be plenty of other cards and letters too, they'd probably get it. Yeah, talking about, let's hold the thought here for a moment on talking about maintaining family relations, and I also want to talk a little bit about just maintaining contact during turbulent times and how important that can be. We do have another couple of telephone calls. The phone switchboard is lighting up rather rapidly, and we do want to bring in as many callers as we can. So let's go to line one now. Hi, you're on the air with Dr. Walsh.
Yes, good afternoon. I suppose you can hear the sound. I'm combining some beans on a farm that's been in the family for over 120 years.
Oh, congratulations.
And we feel very fortunate that this exists, but we've had some rough times, and I can thoroughly relate to some of the comments that you've made. We taped the program. I chose not to watch it because it is during harvest time. I did not want to become upset. I do know that I've had some rough time with some bankers, and I have told them where they can take some vacations and not back down from them. My wife did a tremendous job one time of calling a banker and asking him to come to our house so we could play this game on our own turf rather than the turfs on the bankers. As it turned out, she said it was one of the hardest things she had ever done, but in the end, it did work out. Now, I think it's terribly ironic that this has to be a scenario was on the front line, whereas some of these same conditions can exist on the farm now as what was back in the 80s and what these people could relate to. This concerns me very deeply, but one thing I want to, the biggest point I want to make is that this was a farm family, and from my experience over the 63 years that I've been alive is that farm families are different than others, and I just wonder if you've realized this as you're making it a correlation to talk about families and family values, and after this I'll hang up and listen to your response.
Well, can I? Whoa, don't go away yet. I'd like to know how you think farm families are different.
Yeah, I guess he called it. Yeah, I guess he is. That would have been interesting to point out because as we were putting this, you know, the topic together, I thought, and as I watched, I thought many of the issues are the same as those faced by the general public. But the point may be that the way they're handled or the specific situations that farm families get in may be different than a family that perhaps is just going through, layoffs in jobs, et cetera. There may be some different dynamics at work.
One point that came up in the film was their feeling that they were kind of the little guys, that running a farm family in the 1980s or the 1990s, in the face of all these big corporate farms, that you really feel like you're the little guy, and you do have to come up against the banks and against corporate money interests, and it's very hard to survive on your own as just a family. But I think the gentleman who called in, my hat is off to him, because clearly he and his family have shown enormous resilience.
Yeah.
And I think it's that sticking together and supporting each other and encouraging each other to make it through that has been really the backbone of the very best of farm families.
Mm-hmm. And I think farm families have always been credited with being the epitome of having the American work ethic, as we describe it, the ability to ride it out, get through the tough situations with the bankers, with the government and their programs, with the variability of weather, because all it takes is a change in weather which you can't control.
Can't control.
And your future can be wiped out, as we were watching in this
documentary. And I think that was so hard for Daryl, because his father and he actually didn't give him, sort of blamed him when the drought made for a difficult year, that somehow he wasn't doing it right. And yet when he did have a successful year, his father said, it was just the weather.
It was the moisture. Right.
So on that line, I would say that his family could have been much more supportive to him.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to line two now and welcome you to the program with Dr. Walsh. Hi, you're on the air. Are you there?
Oh, yes. Is that Is that
yeah.
myself?
Yeah, line two.
Okay,
it's
I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's okay.
I don't have a contribution as far as farm, but I do have something that just came into my life. My granddaughter went off to college, and I was so happy to hear that where she is, they are making a concerted effort for all the first-year students, the freshmen, to eat together, to stay together, to support each other, to develop relationships, as my granddaughter said, so nobody falls through the cracks. And I was so glad to hear that because I sent four kids off to college, and I don't remember that 15, 20 years ago, but I thought how great in this tumultuous world that at the colleges they are doing that. And just from that standpoint, and as you said so well, the sticking together and supporting each other, and that's what it's all about wherever you are in life.
That's right. Now, I think we have this idea that resilience is you're sort of like the Teflon-coated pan, that you just kind of have individual armor and things bounce off you. But I think strength and resilience are found in relationships and nourished by relationships, supported by relationships, and you can't do it alone. You cannot go alone. And I think you bring up the other point that families can only do so much, and we really need other community connections. We need them for our kids when they go off to college. We need them in the workplace. We need them in our neighborhoods, and we need to really rebuild this sense of community.
Yes, and as you said, sticking together, helping each other. And
okay.
I just think it's great, and I'm glad to hear about it. Thank you.
Thank you.
The comment you just made, Dr. Walsh, about the sense of community and reaching out to others, brings to mind we need to take into account, it seems, that the family structure is changing.
Mm-hmm.
And we were talking earlier in the hour about the 1950s television family, Father Knows Best, etc., Ozzie and Harriet, but the families are a lot different. The definition of family is a lot different now than it was. And not only are we seeing single parents more prevalent, but we're seeing sometimes same-sex parents, interracial marriages, two mommies, and the like. And so it seems to call for some flexibility that it occurs to me may be totally acceptable to children until they start getting outside influences. Yeah. And there seem to be plenty of outside influences still calling for the traditional, intact family, the nuclear family.
Yeah.
And if we have time in a moment, I'd like to get to that. We have about 7 minutes left in the program, and we do have another phone caller or two that I want to get to. So let's go to line three. You're on the air with Dr. Walsh.
Hi, I just wanted to say I'm very glad that this program's on, because I sat there for three nights and watched The Farmer's Wife, and I thought it was wonderful. In fact, at the end of it, I wrote them a letter, and I just told them that I thought that they were heroes, and not the the characters we see in the movies and on
That's
TV.
Right.
That these were the, or at least to me,
That's
were
right.
the heroes, and especially for him, because at the end he had to what. I feel it's harder to change is to change inside instead of just to work harder and change external things or try to. He had the courage to change inside, and also that their children were very lucky, because even though they might not have had all the new toys and the expensive things, they had the love and the attention of the parents. And at the end, it was wonderful to see him just staying, giving the attention and the love to them. So
absolutely.
To me, I think it'll be, a classic documentary, but also just to show that this is real life. This isn't Hollywood.
That's right. Oh, mm-hmm. yeah. You know, and I think you point to something else about a crisis or adversity, is that as harrowing and horrible as it can be to go through it, sometimes there's a gift that comes out of it. And when you talked about the father, the husband, becoming much more involved with his children because of the crisis, because they had gone to the brink and come back, that in a way they ended up in a better place because of what they had gone through, that there were lessons that he learned in that process that enabled interchange
and brought him much closer with his children. And it also, I think, helped him to appreciate just how much Juanita did every day. Sometimes the parent who's at home may feel, or the parent who's doing the primary child rearing may feel that the other parent doesn't really understand how much is involved in that. And often when they have to switch roles and she goes out for the job and now he's at home, there's a whole new level of awareness.
Mm-hmm. The changing of the roles, it seems, with Daryl staying at home more and taking more care of the children, getting them to school and the like, and Juanita going off to work, was really interesting to me, because it seemed like this couple started out as part of their inherent, as a part of their ideal,
yeah,
might have been being the traditional family. And then the real success in the family, when they settled a lot of their issues and started coming together, not only, well, the bumper crop helped,
yeah,
obviously. Seeing some light at the end of the tunnel to the financial problems helped.
Yeah.
But also when they started changing the roles, it seemed like Daryl was more at peace,
yeah,
and Juanita was being more fulfilled by
that's
being
right
in her job. And it was kind of interesting to watch how it turned into what we might consider to be a non-traditional family, non-traditional roles.
Exactly. And healthier for all of them.
Yeah.
And in fact, one thing that characterizes resilience is not only pulling together, but that each one respects the needs and differences of their partner.
Mm-hmm.
And I think she was asking that from him for a long time. Don't be so worried when I go away for an hour or you don't see me the minute you walk in that I'm going to leave you. I need to feel that I have some freedom. I need to pursue my education. And I want you to appreciate and respect what I need for myself. And if you do so, I will love you more, not less.
I want to thank everyone for calling in this hour. We have about 2 minutes left, Froma, and by way of wrapping up, I just want to turn it over to you, perhaps, to kind of sum up what we've been talking about. And perhaps more importantly, if having watched The Farmer's Wife or just listening to this this program today leaves some families or individuals with questions about where to turn if they're in the situation that Daryl was in, that Juanita was in, if they're in the situation of, I just don't know what to do. I'm frozen right here because there's so much pressure. I'm just trying to live day to day, let alone think about how to change the course.
Yeah.
What should we leave them with?
Well, I think you're maybe asking, is it that those are the times to reach out and seek help? It might be from clergy, from a minister, it might be from a counselor, it might be from extended family members, and to not feel constrained for saying, we're having a rough time right now, I need some support, here's what I'd like from you, or can you help out in some way? To turn to neighbors, to turn to friends, to make community by not being afraid to be dependent. I think that we're all interdependent, and we need to turn to one another. And I think that was one of the things that carried them through.
Mm-hmm.
And I think professional sources of help, people should feel comfortable to come for counseling when that need arises.
And, of course, your new book, Strengthening Family Resilience, is not only for providers of care and therapy, but also it, as I was reading through it, I was just engrossed and noticing similarities to things that I've been through and that friends have been through in their lives, and reading about your personal history.
Uh-huh.
It occurs to me that's a good place to start, too. Strengthening Family Resilience is Dr. Froma Walsh's book. And
thank you. It's actually out today.
Is it out today? I was going to ask because we received, the photocopy. Looked like the manuscript, actually. But it's out today. And who's the publisher?
It's Guilford Press.
It's Guilford Press. Okay,
mm-hmm.
Good. And that should be available in bookstores such as Pages for All Ages. So that's a good place to start. We do appreciate you being with us today. I have one more address to give out. If you want to look up the website for The Farmer's Wife, it's on the PBS website, which is www.pbs.org. And I understand that they do have a page of letters from people to the Farmer's Wife family, which would be the Bushcutters. The note was just handed to me, written like that, at www.pbs.org. So it might be interesting as a follow-up, too, to follow up this program by going to that website and kind of interacting with others who watched it and had impressions.
Very good. And people can reach me at the University of Chicago at the Center for Family Health.
Right. And I was wondering if we had a telephone number for that. I didn't see one.
The best number would be 312-321-6040.
Okay, that's the number that I didn't have.
Okay.
312-321-6040. And if you forget that number, you can call us here at the radio station and we'll get it to you. Dr. Walsh, thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Froma Walsh, who is the co-director of the Center for Family Health at the University of Chicago. And we do thank you for calling in today on the Afternoon Magazine. Tomorrow afternoon on the program in the 1 o'clock hour, we'll be talking about the Krannert Center for the Performing Arts upcoming schedule. So do be with us for that.